Happy Thursday and welcome back to Locked On Red Sox podcast. Thank you so much for making Locked On Red Sox your first listen every single day. I am your host, Massachusetts Pirates team insider Jake Ignaszewski, and unfortunately my co-host Lauren Campbell wasn't able to join me today, but I had the opportunity to have on a very special guest by the name of Chris Cotillo, who is the Red Sox beat writer for MassLive.com. And Chris and I talked a little bit about John Lester retiring, as well as the MLB and the MLB Players Association having their meeting this Thursday. And also, we touched on what the Red Sox could possibly do after the lockout ends.
You are Locked On Red Sox, your daily Boston Red Sox podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I am here with Red Sox beat writer for MassLive.com, Chris Cotillo. So how are we doing today, Chris?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm doing good. How's this lockup been going? I bet the offseason, it's nice to not be super-duper busy with Red Sox games all the time, but especially with this lockout, it must be sort of tough to come up with storylines and stuff.
Yeah, we're just kind of making it up as we go. You know, I mean, it's tough to really write about stuff when everything's completely frozen. Obviously, that's not just a pun for the weather right now, but also, you know, in baseball, because there's just nothing happening. There's been nothing happening since December. No, you know, moves, really no progress with the labor stuff. So there's not a lot to dig into. You know, luckily, we have the Hall of Fame, which is coming up, you know, next week, which that will be interesting. There's been a couple, Red Sox made a couple changes to their coaching staff, front office, but generally really slow. And, now we've even had to, at least with Mass Live, Chris Smith and I who cover the Red Sox, we had to branch out, help out with the Patriots a little bit and do some different things. So it'll find a way to stay busy somehow, but it's not easy.
Makes sense. I saw a few days ago you came out with a recent article, the mailbag stuff. I found it really interesting, some of the questions that people are asking in there. And I always like reading those articles because you get the fans engaged and you right. sort of get to gauge sort of how the fan base is feeling about, you know, the current state of the team.
Yeah, that was interesting. I thought to myself after doing it, you know, I should do stuff like this more because, you know, people are always sending questions on Twitter and, you know, the way the season goes when it's not like this, you know, it never really slows down enough where you feel like you can give those questions enough attention. So, but that was good. We got a lot of good submissions. So that's something that we're going to definitely add in the future. I know Boston Sports Journal does it. The Athletic does it. So we need to do a little bit more.
Yeah, it's always nice getting the fans engaged in hearing their thoughts. But before we get into, you know, Red Sox stuff, I want to talk a little bit about this sports writing class or workshop that you're doing. You've done this for around a year so far. I actually had the opportunity to be a part of it. And funny enough, I was actually looking at some of your notes that, you know, you get at the end of the workshop today to sort of refresh my mind. It's been a great way for me to, you know, not only become a better writer, but learn more a little bit about what's made you so successful in the industry. So I wanted to give you an opportunity real quick just to fill in some of the listeners about that workshop.
Yeah, it's been an interesting kind of journey with that over a year. You know, last year in the off season, nothing was going on really. And I just decided to start kind of a Zoom class to teach any aspiring sports writer, anybody, any experience level or age, about, you know, what it takes to be in the industry and social media stuff and breaking news and opinion writing, podcasting, feature writing, all that type of stuff, and put together, you know, curriculum based on, you know, not just, you know, stuff you learn in college journalism school, but stuff that I've really learned in the industry. Obviously, I don't know everything, but I've gained some stuff in the last couple of years doing this. So I've been lucky enough to have, you know, 100 people come through and take it, and people seem to be getting something out of it. So, you know, the next one starts tonight at 7, so maybe a little bit, you know, late for anybody to sign up for that. But the plan is to keep rolling and pretty much every month, depending on what's going on with the Red Sox. The longer the lockout happens, the more workshops I'll do. So I guess that's one silver lining. But yeah, if anybody's interested in that, they could find me, and hopefully we can keep rolling with it.
Yeah, it was a great experience for myself. And like I was also able to connect with a lot of other sports writers and aspiring sports reporters as well. And it's a great way to network. And I would recommend anybody checking it out. But I hope you guys have been enjoying my conversation with Chris Cotillo so far. But Lauren just wanted to take a second to tell you about Built Bar.
You know me by now. You know how much I absolutely love Built Bar. And now that it's the new year, that means some New Year's resolutions are starting to kick in. And if yours is about getting fit, maybe eating a little bit healthier, make sure you include Built Bar in your plan. Built Bar is the best protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. It doesn't have that chalkiness, maybe that cardboard taste that some other protein bars have. And it makes it easy to stick to your resolution because it tastes so good, you will want to eat it. Unlike those other protein bars, like I said, that can be a little chalky, a little cardboardy, maybe even a little waxy. It's just not good. Built Bar is not like that at all. There are so many flavors to choose from. There's raspberry, double chocolate, mint chocolate, and my favorite, cookies and cream. And Built Bars are covered in 100% real chocolate. So by like week three of your resolution, when eating healthy is getting a little bit tricky, you kind of thinking, where's the chocolate? Built Bar. Built Bar is where the chocolate is at. And we have an offer for you. Go to built.com, use offer code LOCKED15 for 15% off your order. That's LOCKED15 for 15% off at built.com.
Something that happened, we're recording on Wednesday and this will come out Thursday, but something that happened this morning was John Lester announced his retirement. Mm-hmm. And I sort of wanted to get your thoughts on not only your time watching John Lester as a Red Sox fan, but also covering him a little bit. But what was one of your favorite moments from John Lester's Red Sox career?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really been in a scrum with him at the All-Star game maybe once, but never obviously covered him here before by time. I think, you know, when I was growing up, just, 07, the perseverance coming back from cancer and winning, you know, the World Series in 07 obviously stands out, no-hitter, things like that. I think his legacy in Boston is, and through no fault of his own, is that it was amazing and he had a great career here, but it should have been longer. And I think that is because the Red Sox, botched that situation. And then, they've been trying to overcompensate by doling out money to pitchers ever since. I think that's why David Price got his deal. That's why Chris Sale got his contract. Evaldi, those types of guys say, they realize that you got to pay up for some of these guys when they've proven major league success. So I think that, letting Lester go really still haunts John Henry. He even admitted that 2 years ago when they signed Chris Sale to that extension. But just the consistency in his career, I wrote it up this morning that he was retiring. The same ERA and winning percentage. I think it was 3.64 was the ERA in his time with the Cubs and his time with the Red Sox. Pretty remarkable. Even last year with the Cardinals down the stretch, he pitched okay. So a guy that was just kind of quietly dominant for almost two decades, and really impressive career, and by all accounts a really good guy too.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's funny looking back on that. I think I remember that morning when I found out that he was going to the Cubs. It was just so heartbreaking. I remember like a week later on Sports Illustrated, it's got John Lester in a Cubs uniform. But it's crazy because you brought up, I think he signed with the Cubs for like 170, and we signed the Red Sox signed David Price for like 210, and I'll never forget 2013. They sort of would wear the shirts like I'm the ace, like I'm Wade Miley, Rick Porcello, and the Red Sox never really could find that ace until they traded for Chris Sale.
Yeah, they had homegrown pitching is tough to develop. The Red Sox have seen that more than anybody. They really haven't been able to do it since Lester and Buchholz, and even Eduardo Rodriguez doesn't count because he started with the Orioles, and so now they're hoping. Houck and Whitlock and some of these guys, Seabold, Mata will be the next wave of that. But so far, it's taken them almost a decade to replicate it, and they haven't been able to.
Yeah, exactly. Fans are hoping Chaim Bloom, like you said, can sort of do something with that. But as we mentioned at the start of the show, the MLB is currently in a lockout, and it was announced, I believe it was yesterday, that the MLB and MLB Players Association is going to be meeting on Thursday. And I was curious on what your thoughts were when you heard that, and do you think anything will really come from that meeting?
I mean, it's something. It's progress. I mean, I guess that is, you know, good, because we haven't had anything happen really at all for, you know, a month and a half now. So the fact that they'll, you know, get together, I don't think that they're going to, you know, the old adage is, you know, when they're trying to name a new pope, the white smoke comes out of the chapel there. I don't think we're going to see the white smoke on Thursday afternoon, but I think it's, you know, a step in the right direction, obviously, that they are going to be in the same room. They're going to be talking about these things. They're going to be, you know, actually face to face. So, you know, I think at this point they realize that there's really not much time before spring training's supposed to happen. You know, I always look at, you know, the week after the Super Bowl is usually when I head down there, and, you know, we're starting the NFL playoffs this weekend. So it's time to kind of get moving. There are a lot of issues. The sides are going to have to make concessions. You know, I think if a couple weeks of spring training are delayed, it's not the end of the world. It's not great, but it's not the end of the world. But if the start of the season is threatened over this, I think fans are going to be really, really pissed, because you're looking at 2 out of 3 years where you're not getting 162 games. I don't think we can, you know, completely fault baseball for 2020, obviously. You know, they had to shut down for a period of time, but they cost themselves some games with the going back and forth then. If they do it again, I think it's going to turn a lot of fans off, because they, you know, I don't think your average fan has a lot of sympathy for millionaires fighting with billionaires. Now, I do think some changes need to be made. I think the game will be better with some certain things happening. But if it takes away from, you know, everybody's bottom line, if it takes away from the enjoyment of the fans and keeps stealing content from me, I think people are going to be upset.
Yeah, I completely agree. I felt bad. We've had some Red Sox minor leaguers on the show, and I feel bad for them, because, like, we don't know when we're supposed to report. Like, we're right. Getting no updates on this stuff. I hope you have been enjoying my conversation so far with Red Sox beat writer from MassLive.com, Chris Cotillo. But I just want to take a second real fast to tell you about Bet Online. Bet Online would like to wish you a happy new betting year as we continue our march to the playoffs and beyond. Bet Online remains the number one spot for all the best sports wagering action for 2022. New year and a new updated desktop and mobile website to sign up today and receive your 50% off welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use our promo code LOCKEDON to get started. From football, basketball, hockey, boxing, and UFC, right to your favorite Vegas casino games, don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for 2022. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to wager all your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. And we don't have any say in it. But as you mentioned, you know, spring training is coming close. You know, it's interesting looking at the supposed pitchers and catchers report date. But do you see this situation being resolved in the next month or so?
I think that's the goal. I would say it's about 50-50 for them to report on time. I think, you know, still I would – the Vegas books actually disagree with me on this. I would say it's still more likely than not that the season starts on time, but, you know, every day that passes, that becomes more and more in jeopardy. So I don't know. It's I think in my world, where we spend, you know, a lot of time down at Fort Myers, I think spring training is a little too long anyway. So if they cut it to only, you know, 4 weeks or four and a half, I think that, you know, like I said, wouldn't be the end of the world. But again, if it's, you know, mid February and there's no agreement, things are going to start getting delayed. And I don't know how much the players want to put up with that. I think a big piece of it also is if players are in their minds thinking that they can do a 3-week spring training like they did in 2020 again, if that was enough for them. And then, you know, I think that's a big thing. I think there's some guys that are going to say, you know, I never got ready. You know, I think Matt Barnes was one guy in 2020 who said, you know, I never was able to get ready because we didn't have enough time. There were some guys that said, you know, it actually was okay. But, you know, I don't know exactly what people think that the quality of play was when they came back in August of that year. But, yeah, there's a lot of factors here. I hope it's not delaying, you know, March 31st to Fenway.
Yeah, I completely agree. And as fans, we're just waiting to see what the Red Sox are going to do after the lockout. I mean, especially with what happened in, you know, the last few minutes before the lockout actually went intact, when the Red Sox traded Hunter Renfroe to the Brewers. There's a lot of question marks for this 2022 roster and how Chaim Bloom is going to, you know, add to the bullpen. You know, he mentioned that he wanted a right-handed bat. And I found it interesting. You've brought up guys like Chris Bryant, Nicholas Castellanos, as well as Jorge Soler as potential fits for that right-handed bat. But a lot of fans, you know, have in their mind Suzuki from over in Japan, and as well as Kyle Schwarber. But how much of a likelihood do you think it is that the Red Sox could sign some of those high-profile guys like Brian Castellanos or Soler?
I think that it's what's interesting to me is that, you know, the Red Sox went into this offseason and an outfield was not a clear need. You know, you have Verdugo, Kike Hernandez, and Hunter Renfroe on the roster for next year. At that point, you have Jaron Duran still in AAA, or he can be up at any time. Obviously, you know, they're going to be interested in Schwarber, who gives you another option, and J.D. Martinez can play there a little bit. So, you know, heading in, we weren't even thinking about the outfield mix because it seemed pretty much settled. You know, Renfroe had a great year. Kike had a good year. Verdugo had a good year. And then they dropped this kind of bombshell, not, you know, a super blockbuster, but, you know, 30 minutes before the deadline, and Renfroe out, Bradley in. You kind of feel like Bradley's probably not an everyday outfielder. So you think then there's going to be another shoe that drops here. But in trying to figure out that other shoe, it's not going to happen immediately. It's going to happen whenever this thing's resolved. And nobody's able to talk or negotiate, so you can't tell, you know, you can't talk to anybody about what they're thinking or what they're trying to do or anything like that. So it's a great mystery, and I think, you know, public perception wise when that trade happened, it hurt the Red Sox because it looks like, okay, well, we just traded Renfroe for Bradley, and now the major league team's worse, and there's no, you know, other move because now they're locked out. But, you know, I think it'll make clear sense in time. That's why, you know, I keep writing Bryant, Castellanos, Soler, Conforto, you know, trade for an outfielder somewhere. You know, they have plenty of options. I think the flexibility of Kike Hernandez helps them do that. If they want to move him to second base all the time, which was a plan before last season, that's on the table. There's a few different things they can do. So, you know, it'll be fascinating to see. You know, I think that, you know, Correa and Story are still out there. I don't see that as much as some other people. I don't think that those are really the smart moves, just because you can't really move Xander Bogaerts to second base the year before his walk here, because he's not going to like that. It's going to increase the chances that he signs elsewhere. Plus, I think if the Red Sox are going to commit a ton of money to an infielder, it's going to be one or both of the two they have on their roster. So, you know, I wouldn't rule out anything. I just think that, you know, there are moves left to come, and I'm going to be extremely busy when this lockout ends.
Yeah, I completely agree. I found it very interesting, sort of the reaction after the Hunter Renfroe trade. I mean, I know that Chaim Bloom loves his prospects, and we'll see, like you said, how this all plays out down the line. Same thing with the Andrew Benintendi deal, you know, last year. I hope you guys did enjoy part one of my conversation with Mass Live beat reporter Chris Cotillo. Make sure you check out part two tomorrow, where Chris and I talk a little bit about what the catching situation might look like in 2023, as well as touch on Chris's thoughts on the Hall of Fame voting thus far, and what it might look like in next week's results. But I just want to thank you guys so much for making Locked On Red Sox your first listen every single day. Now make your second listen Locked On Bets, your daily one-stop shop for all your gambling needs. Locked On Bets, hosted by your boy Q, with expert analysis and insight from Lee Sterling. It's free and available on all platforms. So also make sure you go over and check out Locked On Red Sox Twitter, which is LO_Red Sox, because we get you guys, the fans, involved in every single episode. So for every single guest that we have, we let you guys know what topics we're going to be talking about and get your guys' thoughts, so you guys can get involved in every single episode and ask these beat writers, these former players, and these current players what you guys want to hear in every episode. Also, make sure you check out my Twitter. It's at Jake Iggy, as well as my co-host Lauren Campbell's Twitter. It's La La La, that's three laws, Lauren with four R's. So like I said before, thanks so much for tuning in. We really do appreciate all the support. And make sure to check out part two of my conversation with Chris Cotillo tomorrow. Peace.